So welcome all. If we have any guests with us tonight, we welcome guests at any time at the Ottawa PC News Group. If you want to join, I paste it into the chat window, or you can just go to our homepage on the website, and there is a renew or join, or I guess reverse of that, join or renew link at the top of the page, and it's only $20 a year. So if you'd like to support our cause, please join our happy band. And with that, we'll get going on tonight's deck. And this is just another celebration of our 200th Q&A.
Chris, your very large mouse arrows on the screen, the yellow one, if you want to take that off.
Sorry. Okay, thank you. And just a reminder that Bob Harris last week gave a presentation on Ideogram, and he promised to come back after Q&A this week for anybody who's interested in some of the more nitty-gritty and tips and tricks on how to more effectively use Ideogram. And so that is going to be on tonight, and that will be following Q&A. So anybody who's not interested in this particular topic can feel free to drop off the call at that point in time. And we had a question come into the question box, or suggestion box, sorry, at opcug.ca from B on security camera recommendations. And so what she detailed was that she was looking to install an indoor security camera. She currently is using services from Rogers Ignite for TV and internet and the Rogers Apple phone. And they have some program that is called Self-Protect that has something to do with that. And she has standalone security camera in the past, and it was monitoring a dog that would chew up window frames, and she felt that the software might be out of date. So very old Honeywell, now TELUS security system for fire doors, windows, and sump pump water level. And all the sensors are old, need to be replaced. Some of the options that she was considering based on her current system are from Honeywell, Rogers, or Genie. And she doesn't like the idea of her information being stored in the cloud and wonders a little bit whether she'd been too paranoid about that. And she was asking if anybody had experience with systems and how secure they are. And neither Alan nor I have any experience with that. So Alan posted it to the member forum. And he got some comments back from a couple of the users out there. Thank you very much for those who contributed to the conversation. Stefan talked about getting electrical power to the camera. It can be a pain because you have to have somewhere to plug in the cameras, and they might not be convenient to where you want to put the camera to have the electrical outlet, so you could be drilling through walls and so forth. You could do power over Ethernet, but that has its own special problems as well, running the Ethernet cables. He suggests that you might want to have a UPS to power the Wi-Fi cameras and or the recorder. And I would say rather than or, probably and, all of those three things, so that in the event of a power failure, you still have coverage. And if the electrical connection is not easily accessible, or is easily accessible, sorry, the bad guys could actually just disconnect your camera. So might want to be able to hide some of those things a little bit. He talked about exterior cameras, even though B's situation was specifically to interior cameras. So he suggested checking the temperature or the operating range of the equipment, and some don't work well below minus 20 degrees C. And also waterproofing if you are exterior. He suggested that if you're using Wi-Fi and have a lot of cameras, you might need to upgrade to a mesh Wi-Fi system, and that could cost you a little bit of extra money. Wi-Fi setup is easier for some brands than others, but he didn't mention in particular what brands are easier than others. High resolution can get you better pictures, but the recordings, of course, are going to get larger, so you have to worry about storage space for that. Most IP cameras will support event detection, So it'll tag the actual occurrence of an event with the continuous recording. Cameras can upload recordings through file transfer protocol to a computer, but whatever computer that you're uploading it to has to be on all the time in order to receive those recordings. Most IP cameras have an SD card slot where it can save the recordings locally rather than onto a server or something else. There's phones or desktop apps for connecting to the camera, downloading recordings. Most recent cameras will include common codecs, H.264 and H.265. Some video apps don't support the codecs, and so you might have some proprietary things that you have to deal with. And he mentioned that SD cards can break, and so he had a camera in a really awkward position, and after 2 months, the SD card stopped working, had to get out his ladder to actually be able to replace the SD card. And then finally, with local recording, you do have control over the privacy. So this goes to B's concern about storing it in the cloud. But then bad guys can break in and steal your local recordings, which would sort of defeat the purpose of it. With local recording, you may not have full, with cloud recording, sorry, you may not have full privacy, but the bad guys can't easily delete it unless they can hack your account and get onto the site. Local recording is free. Cloud recording is likely to cost you a monthly fee or very low retention periods. So thank you, Stefan, for all of those comments. Oh, some more from Stefan, sorry. Security camera, it just has some comments on security camera recordings that he's noted of weird things that got picked up. A police car chasing and stopping a car, driver surrendering to the police, snowplow hitting ice and sliding into a car. Neighbor's teenager smoking dope in the snowbank at night. A hooded teen looking at the door and windows in the middle of the night. And a getaway car parked in front of his house as thieves tried to steal his neighbor's truck. So it can pick up some entertaining things to watch, I guess.
A comment from Tom, Chris, that some security cameras have solar power.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. That would make sense. Yeah.
You don't need to worry about snow. I mean, it has to be at a big slope, and you need almost like southern exposure as well to make sure that the snow slides off and that operates all year. One other thing you have to worry about is legalities. Your cameras should basically look only at your own property. If it's looking at neighbors' properties, first of all, they may get mad, and they do have legal rights to not be spied on continuously. So you want to point your stuff at your own stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I wonder if it's been, do you know if that's been tested in court in Canada, that if you're recording video and it happens to pick up your neighbor's house or anything like that?
Yes, there are. There's a legal YouTuber. I'll take a look and see if I can find him in my history, who addresses privacy things, and he's addressed this in the past.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's something I'd never really thought of. Okay, we have talked about security camera setup in the past at Q&A, and the URL for that is in the chat and on the slide as you see it. So this was talking about Wyze cameras in particular. And there was some stuff about, you know, what you get in the box and things like that. And then we had another comment on the forum. I won't attribute it to anybody because they've expressed concern about that in the past, so they just wanted to be talked about as an interested by party. And so he talked about Lorex 4K power over Ethernet cameras. So he has 8 cameras around the house and property. Easy to install, give good pictures, come with a DVR, could be secured inside your home. Outside Ethernet is not required. However, when connected to your network, you can see the video on any device in your home, including your smart TV. So that's kind of cool. And so that URL there is pasted into the chat as well. Also, one of the benefits is none of your data leaves the home. So if you are concerned about it being recorded in the cloud, that's not there. They have a free forwarding service that allows you to connect remotely directly to your DVR and cameras. Nothing stored in the cloud. And when gone from home, he can check his cameras a couple of times daily. So that's a possibility, I guess. Okay.
Sorry, Chris, another comment here from Bob. All right. It says Wise cams have cloud storage short term, but no monthly fees.
Okay. Yeah, I guess in a lot of cases, if you have any security event that you're going to pick it up within a couple of days and grab a copy of it off of the cloud storage. So kind of nice not to have monthly fees. I see Jocelyn is asking how much space is needed typically. Does camera store typically only recordings when something is moving? I personally have no idea. If other people have an idea on that, please chime in.
Well, on the Wise cams, you can set up the viewing zone. So if there's a tree blowing in the wind, you can take the squares out of that tree, like 25 squares in that block, and the tree area will no longer affect the camera. And it'll only get people on the walk. And you have the cards and the camera, but the cards go 3 or 7 days for high definition or standard definition, and there's no monthly fees. And I think you have over a week of the cloud storage. And I get it in my hearing aids. Someone comes to the front door when I'm walking the dog, and that happened on Sunday. I wasn't quite home yet, and somebody arrived earlier, so I looked at the and I phoned who it is, and I phoned him, and he was just a block away, and he came back to the doorway.
Yeah, that's good.
I got an alert that someone was at the front door. Give a little ding in your phone, or in my case, my hearing aids. Anyway.
Neat. Tom, thanks for pasting in the URL. I see it's a broken URL, so if anybody's picking that up, I think there's some spaces between the link and the following characters, so stick that together. Before you try to use it. Stu says, if you're friendly with neighbors, you can have your cams point at them. They can point their cams at you. Good to get extra coverage. Oh, and Tom corrected the link. And Bill says, my 8 Lorex cameras record continuously. My 6 terabyte hard drive provides 6 or 7 days recording. Boy, that's a lot of storage being taken up. But I guess you don't need to keep it forever, so you just need to keep it long enough that if you do have a security event that you can preserve that particular recording. Okay.
Also,
Bob Garam has noted that some cameras can do stop motion or start motion, I guess.
Also, one big reason you might have a camera, like a video doorbell, is to take a look at stuff that's arrived, so you know if something's arrived, and also you know if someone's stealing it away. So may want to consider that in the field of view of the camera. You may want to turn your camera 90 degrees so you have a wider field of view up and down.
Good idea.
And some have actually a separate camera pointing down towards your porch.
Yeah, cool. Good idea. And then Bob Gowan says some cameras can be set to detect only humanoid features. So that could cut down on your recording a lot if it just picks up people and doesn't record otherwise. That'd be kind of a neat feature for sure. So hopefully, Bea, you've got a bunch of extra information that can help you on your quest to replace your security cameras. Okay, we'll move on. So I have a presentation here on the geostationary operational environmental satellites, which are put up by NOAA in the United States. And it is a collection of 20 different images of North and South America of different spectrums, bands of information or types of information that are being captured. So things that are available are things like full color, lightning detection, infrared images, detecting where there's dust, wind, water vapor, and all kinds of more ones. There's various resolutions are available for each one of the 20 different images. going from a low of 339 by 339 pixels on a JPEG to a huge 17,000 by 17,000 pixel TIFF. Now, I had some problems. I downloaded a couple of the TIFFs, and I wasn't able to find anything that could actually open it. All I'd get is a black screen or an error message saying that there was something wrong with the TIFF file. And I tried a couple of them, so I don't know if there's a particular reader you need for the TIFFs that they're generating, but all of the JPEGs seem to be fine. And they also have animation loops that are available. All the images are up.
You might want to try UrfanView, perhaps the 64-bit version.
UrfanView didn't do it either. Yeah, that's my standard image viewer, and it didn't help. And I tried some photo editors. I tried Windows Photo Viewer. I tried a number of different ones, and no luck so far. But anyhow, I don't really have a need for 17,000 by 17,000 pixel TIFF images. Anyways, I just thought I would try and see what it looked like, but no luck. All of the images are updated every 10 minutes, which is pretty cool. And
Bob Gowan is suggesting using Manifold Viewer.
Okay. Well, anybody who wants to download the 17,000 by 17,000 pixel, you might want to try that and see if it works for it. So some of the sample images I'm just going to show here is this is cirrus clouds in near infrared. Here's some wind images, and so they use the standard I forget what they call them, flags? No, they're not flags, but they basically are showing there's three height levels that they show on their maps. So there's high-level winds, mid-level winds, and low-level winds, and then each of the markers there, if it has a short dash on it, that is equivalent to 5 knots. If it's a long dash, it's equivalent to 10 knots, and the flags are equivalent to 50 knots. And so you can add them all up on each individual one to find out what the wind speed is over that particular area at that particular time. So these are all the remnants of Hurricane Helene, and I wish I caught it a little bit earlier when it was still a Cat 4, but I caught them a little bit on the late side. But interesting map. And then here is one of the animation loops. So this is true color daytime. And so it just goes through this loop, and you can see the red I just marked off for the area around the remnants of Hurricane Helene. And you can see how this is covering all of North and South America on the loop. So pretty cool. Anybody's interested in that sort of satellite imagery? As I say, it's updated every 10 minutes, so kind of neat. And with this now, I would like to turn it over to Linda Buskey for a presentation here she's got, and she's going to share her screen for this.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. So before I actually kick off the PowerPoint, I just wanted to make a few comments, technology tips that Chris and I use while we're traveling. So on this particular trip, we both take a laptop with us. And I know that sounds a bit excessive, but it works out very well for us, especially when you're on a small ship. So many of you might have been on larger cruise ships. And on larger cruise ships, you have lots of entertainment in the evening. You have Broadway shows and magicians. You have live bands and restaurants or bars. You have many movies on your TV, in your rooms, all sorts of choices. But on small ships, you do not. So in the evening time, and the sun went down pretty early as we got above the Arctic Circle, the only thing available to us was CNN, and that's not really what I was in the mood to watch during my holidays. So we were really glad that we brought our laptops so that, you could, there's Wi-Fi available, free Wi-Fi on some of the ships now, free Wi-Fi in all the hotels, airports, McDonald's, anywhere you go, it's just so much more prevalent than it was, say, even 5 years ago. So we could do whatever we wanted in terms of streaming or what have you. But typically what I wanted to do in the evening was work on my photos. So I took about 2,200 photos, but by the time I got home, because of my evening work, I was down to, I culled it down to 400 edited photos. So I'd edited 400 photos before I even got back home, and then I culled it further down to about 300 that I posted into the four albums on Flickr. So all this to say, the technology really helped us out, even though it was a little heavy to lug through the airport. Now, I also had a tablet because I like to have it in bed just to read my book and play my puzzles before I go to sleep, but that was kind of a bit overkill. I could have used the laptop. And then for phones, we did not do roaming. Again, we used the Wi-Fi wherever available, restaurants and that. But there was one instance where we needed to make a local call, and that would have been very expensive to call Canada and have it come back. So we were able to take advantage of the kindness of strangers. The not a total stranger, but the receptionist at the hotel let us use her personal phone. Now, you can have the option of buying a SIM card, a local SIM card, if you do think you're going to be doing a few local calls that would make that a lot easier. But we only had the one call to make, and that was to try and track down our luggage that Air Canada had lost. So, not lost, misplaced. So anyway, I will get going. I just wanted to make those comments on the technology side. Oh, and one more thing. So when I'm doing the photo editing, when Chris was doing photo editing on his, both our programs that we buy, I purchased the Photoscape X for about $70. It allows me to put it on 6 different computers. Chris's software, he buys around $100 on one photo raw. He can put it on multiple computers as well. So it's always on our laptops. They're already always ready to go. Okay, so this is a time presentation, so I know it's exactly 4 minutes, so we'll just start. So Norway has wonderful sunrise sunsets. We purposely went at this time of year. We did not want the midnight sun because I do enjoy seeing the color of the morning and the sunsets. Incredible skies, very weird, different skies from what I'd seen. Every time I looked out the window, there seemed to be different kinds of clouds. Lovely kind of, you know, the god shots and things like that. So we never ran out of beautiful clouds to take photos of.
Well, Linda, you can move your mouse pointer.
Oh, sorry. And then we have rainbows were quite frequent. And often you see rainbows late in the day, but here we were getting them at noon just because of the angle of the sun. And then we had the opportunity to go up on deck, see the northern lights. They would actually call you in the middle of the night and tell you there's northern lights if you want to get up and get dressed. And, of course, we did. So that was very fortunate. We were very happy with that. Even from a moving ship, we certainly couldn't use the tripod. The ship was moving up and down too much, but we caught them on our cell phones. And then isolated communities were fascinating to sail by, fishing farms and other little areas. And then we went to this fjord for an afternoon. They anchored. We could go ashore, but really the best views were from the ship. So we just kept walking around the ship and watching the clouds form and the mist moving, and it was just a fantastic afternoon of beautiful, beautiful scenery. Lovely temperatures. This was from our balcony. It was highs of 20 every day, even when we were many, many degrees above the Arctic Circle. We had highs of 20s, so lows around 14. Great food. Half the menu was vegan. The other half had a lot of seafood. As you can see, I'm a huge seafood fan, so that was fine, but there was also lots for the carnivore like Chris. And then this is the view from Tromso. We took the cable car up, lovely city there, and we hiked a little further and saw these wild reindeer. That was great, and the two males in the bottom left there were duking it out for the female attentions later on. And then this was the best-selling electric scooter in Northern Europe, and it was made in Scandinavia. That was really cute. And the most northerly point in Europe, called the North Cape. And I took that photo on the left from a moving bus, so it just shows you don't miss the shots from a bus. And this was a very narrow fjord. Our ship just fit. Tight squeeze. And just some night shots that I took. That's our sister ship, the other Havila ship. So you can see it's not monstrous. It held about 300 people. And northern architecture, the white church was supposed to look like an iceberg. And then you see the sod roofs, they're pretty common. And then the one on the left was a hotel, the one on the right was a museum. And this is the world's strongest maelstrom, so it would just suck you right down to the bottom of the ocean. And it was caused by the tides coming in and out of the fjord. But the view from our balcony was like that all the time. Like you just could look at it anytime, night or day, and see beautiful, beautiful scenery very close to shore. And then the fishing industry, boats, and then these dried up codheads. And apparently the dried fish gets sold mostly to Italy for whatever reason. And then this female stevedore in the upper left corner and this bachelorette party that was on the stern of one of the vessels in the harbor. So you never know what's going on in the harbor. And then these teenagers serenading us with the Adele songs before we set sail that evening. So it was really cute. And then we hiked up Torghatten. It's a mountain that had a cave and it's since eroded to a hole. And so you can walk up for half an hour. We were walking up those stairs for half an hour. There's no flat part. It's complete total stairs, level 3 hike in Norway. But we really had a good time. And that was when we were sailing by on the ship afterwards, and you can see the hole in the mountain. And that's it.
Okay, thanks very much, Linda. And
Oh,
we had a question from Carol. No glaciers? No, we did not see any
no,
glaciers.
no glaciers.
No. I don't know. I don't actually know if they have a lot
I
of.
don't know how far you'd have to go to that. Probably beyond Norway and closer to the Arctic. So it's not like Canada, you know. You
Yeah.
probably have to go closer to the North Pole to get them. I'm not sure.
Well, we were at the North Cape, which is the
A
northernmost
little.
point of Europe, so.
Yes, I know, but that's not the North Pole. That's just the land. So,
There was no
Yeah.
snow at all. I didn't
So
see
I
any.
don't. To the
There was a
mountains.
little bit of snow we saw it occasionally in the mountains. And there might have been glaciers we could have taken bus trips to, but we didn't notice any. We didn't remember any being advertised. But they actually cheated a little bit on the North Cape because it's the most northerly point in Europe that you can get to by a vehicle, a car, or a bus. And then there's a peninsula that goes a little further that you can access by a hiking trail or a boat.
There are lots of glaciers, but they're in the mountains,
Okay.
and some of them do have outlet glaciers that come down into the fjords, but never right to sea level, not like
Okay.
Mount
Okay. Thanks, B.
or anything like that.
So
But other mountains are
you'd have to
there
take
are
a bus.
lots of glaciers,
Yeah.
but
So there's
one.
not some in the water, like just with the Titanic and all that, you know, those kinds?
No. No. They
No,
don't
well,
do that
not
much.
in September anyway. I mean,
if they break loose, it would probably be springtime like in Canada. But we were 20 kilometers from the Russian border. So that's the position we were far north. But yeah, maybe there's some that break off, that flowed down in the spring, but not where we were. And we were in very protected
Not a
sea.
big iceberg area
Yeah.
like Greenland or northern
Yeah.
Canada.
One of the exciting excursions was a trip to the Russian border. I don't know why anybody would
Yeah, we didn't do
pay to
that
go
one.
on an excursion to the Russian
Just
border,
see
but there you go.
it. I've been to Russia. I didn't need to see it again. Anyway, thanks everyone.
Okay.
I know some of you are interested in seeing some of the photos. So
Gorgeous.
I have
Thank
lots
you.
of I have 4 albums on Flickr. If anybody's interested, I can post the links in the chat.
Okay, thanks very much, Linda. That was great. Okay, we'll move on. So this was something that Alan pointed out to me, and was in PC World, and the title of the article was "JPEG is Dying," which is one of these clickbait sort of things, I guess, in a way. But he kicked it over to me, knowing that I'm more interested in image formats and so forth than he is. So if we look back at JPEG, it was actually introduced like over 30 years ago, September 18th, 1992. The name JPEG, it's actually JPEG is its real full name. And it comes from the Joint Photographic Experts Group. And that was a group that was formed in 1986. And they were asked to create a standard for compressing photos. And the aim was to get efficient storage on devices and for transmission over the internet, where speeds were an awful lot slower than they are nowadays. It does support lossy compression. Now, it actually supports non-, non-loss compression, so with no loss in quality at all. But it is normally used with lossy compression, which reduces the file size, and they do that by discarding image data that is really hard or impossible for the human eye to detect at its more reasonable compressions. So you can get significant reductions in file size through it with minimal visible quality loss. It is the most widely used graphics format globally and is particularly used in digital photography and web publishing, and we see JPEGs everywhere. So JPEG does support lossy compression, and it can lead to a reduction in quality. So you can get two forms of reduction in the quality. One is pixelated or blocky areas of the image as they basically reduce the resolution of it. Personally, I don't see that happening in the images that I work with, even with high degrees of JPEG compression. Usually it's only with really extreme compression that you'll see that. JPEG supports eight color bits per color channel. And so that will give you 256 colors per channel, each of the three channels, for a total of 16.7 million colors. Sounds like a lot, but it's actually insufficient for today's sophisticated color management systems. JPEG compression will often sacrifice on colors. An example of this would be if you have an image with, say, 200 pixels in one area that each have slightly different values in the color. JPEG might decide, okay, well, let's just say we've got 200 pixels, all of the same value. And so they will just blend them all into one color value, and that'll save an awful lot of space in the storage of it. The result is, though, that you can get banding in the colors if you try to press this too far. Here's an example where I have a 1664 by 1306 pixel image, and it's about half a megabyte in file size. And with extreme compression on this, I think I was going to a JPEG quality of about 15 out of 100. And so it's the same resolution, 1664 by 1306 pixels, but now it's only 70K in size. And you can see how you get the color banding, especially in the greens in the background, where they've decided, oh, these greens are similar enough. We're just going to call them one value and say we've got several thousand of them or whatever you have in that particular area. And so it makes the file size an awful lot smaller, but you can get into that weird color banding. Notice that the resolution doesn't look too bad. Like the detail of the bee and the flower, you know, they're pretty close to being similar or very, very similar. So now let's look at the four modern successors that they were going to talk about in the PC World article. So the first one they talked about was AVIF, and it's one of the most promising file formats out there. It does have very, very good compression performance, so it can significantly reduce the size of the photos beyond what JPEG will do, but still maintaining the quality. And it supports color depths up to 12 bits per channel, as well as transparency. So that's much, much better color resolution or color fidelity that you will end up. So it works much better with the modern technologies that are used for photo management and things like that. And it can also display animations. Right now, the most common for doing animations is through GIF files. And that is an ancient format, very low color depth, and it has a lot of other problems with it as well. So going to a more modern format that also can display animations could be definitely a benefit. It is supported by Chrome and Firefox since 2020. Edge only since January of this year. And that brings forward my first point, is that you have to worry about the support for these different formats in order for them to become universal. So the fact that Edge just started supporting it means that last year, it was highly unlikely that anybody on a website was actually going to use AVIF as a file format for images they want to store on the web, because they knew that a significant portion of the population wouldn't see it. A note I have here is just that other Chromium-based browsers are likely to have support for AVIF. I got tired of looking around to try and find out if each of them did actually have support or not. In all likelihood, they do. but seeing as Edge only gained it January this year, who knows? The next one is JPEG XL, and the article referred to this as the logical successor to JPEG, designed by the same group, designed to be a successor to the JPEG format. They call it highly compatible, which I think, I don't know, when somebody says highly compatible, I sort of think like sort of pregnant. I mean, you are or you're not. You're either compatible or you're not compatible. So if highly compatible would tell me that there's going to be some problems with using it in some formats or something like that. It does have more efficient compression, can easily save 50 to 75% more storage space over top of JPEG. And that's without compromising the image quality. It does support huge color depths up to 32 bits and huge resolutions, and so it's particularly attractive for professional applications. Interestingly, Google removed JPEG XL support from Chromium-based browsers a number of years ago, and that, you would think, might kill any chance that JPEG XL would become a logical successor for the JPEG file format if Google removes it. WebP is another one. I'm starting to see WebP files around on the web now. And so it was developed by Google. So it's seen pretty widely on the web. If you right-click on a graphic, nowadays there's a reasonable sort of chance that you'll get a save as that saves it as a WebP format. It combines the advantages of both the JPEG and PNG, and so it has transparency. It supports lossy and lossless compression, just as JPEG format does, although we rarely see lossless compressed JPEGs. It's particularly good for transparent background images. It's already integrated into a lot of web applications like WordPress and Twitter. Some of the AI image generation programs that I've seen lately, they display WebP format files. It has not yet achieved the same popularity as JPEG. HEIC and HEIF came from Apple, and so they brought it out for use on the iPhone, and it is being used on some high-end cameras as well. It offers better compression with very good quality, supports transparency and color depths of up to 16 bits, but it could replace JPEG format in the long term, but it has a disadvantage that Apple licenses it. So for encoding the files, you don't need it for displaying the files or interpreting the files, but if you want to encode files in HEIC or HEIF, then you actually need to pay licensing fees to Apple, which not a lot of people really want to do. So which format will prevail? So all four of the ones that the article mentions, AVIF, JPEG XL, WebP, and HEIC, HEIF, they have far more efficient compression, so you'll get smaller files. You'll get much better image quality than you will get with JPEG with lossy compression. Technically, much more advanced file formats. They are better suited to the needs of photographers, designers, web developers, and so forth. Now, here I say JPEG XL is not likely a winner, and the reason why the article talks about this is that because Google removed it from Chrome and at the turn of 2022-2023. So it was removed from all other Chromium-based browsers. The reason that Google gave was alleged lack of interest, and so I think there's probably other reasons than that. That could seal the fate of JPEG XL before it really had a chance to catch on, because of the fact that the global share of Chromium browsers is 70-80%. But wait just a second, because beyond what I found out in the article, I found some additional information. So the world is more than just the web, though. So you got to think about, if you're looking at a graphic file format, how are you using it? The web is just one way of doing it. So every photo editor supports JPEG. Every program that can import photo images into it, such as PowerPoint and so forth, supports JPEG. AVIF, JPEG XL, WebP, HEIC, HEIF, not quite so much. Let's look at an example, PowerPoint. It only gained support for WebP July 16th of this year. I was actually kind of surprised by that, because I was often getting these WebP file and I was automatically going in and converting them to JPEGs before I imported them into PowerPoint. Turns out I don't have to do that anymore. PowerPoint will natively support it now. HEIC, HEIF, the Apple format, they're only supported if you have specific extensions that are installed in Windows. AVIF are only supported if you have another extension installed in Windows. And JPEG XL is simply not supported in PowerPoint, period. So you have to think about what are the programs you use when you're thinking about what file formats you want to use for graphics. And what's going to catch on as a replacement for JPEG? It has to be a format that is going to be widely, widely supported, or it just ain't going to work. So breaking news, I just saw this today. Petapixel had a podcast, and this was just on September 18th. They had it. I just watched it today. And their article online said why Apple uses JPEG XL in the iPhone 16 and what it means for your photos, which is kind of cool. So Apple is natively supporting, starting at the iPhone 16, JPEG XL. And some of the highlights of JPEG XL as Apple was seeing it and why they were thinking it was useful, up to 55% smaller files than you were getting with JPEGs, up to 32 bits per channel, so very good color fidelity, cleaner image, virtually lossless, even though it is even when it's used in a lossy format. They say typical JPEG artifacts are just totally gone. Designed to handle very rich colors, high precision, high dynamic range images. No guarantee yet of widespread adoption, but native support by Apple and Samsung actually supports it in their latest phones as well. Could help. So it could well be that JPEG XL will be a strong contender for replacement for JPEG. So stay tuned for what you see in upcoming support for new graphic file formats. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Chris, a few comments in the chat. Okay. You talk quite a bit about file compression and making things smaller. What the downside, Tom notes, is that if you create a small JPEG under 100K, it'll look fine on the computer, but then it won't print very well. It'll come out blocky.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the case that the resolution of the screen is actually very low compared to what you'll get printing. And so that's a perennial problem for sure. And you'll even get it when with any kind of printing, you're probably going to want to run to high resolution photos that have a good color depth to them in order to get good printing that will print nicely, whereas on screen it might be fine, but yeah, printing is always going to be more demanding of the color system. And that's why they were saying in that article was that going beyond 8-bit color depth and high resolutions is really important for moving forward to a replacement for JPEG.
Tom also says that he believes it's extremely unlikely you'd need more than 16 bits for each color for human sensing.
Yeah, I guess that's arguable. But yeah, JPEG, well, I don't know. For human sensing, beyond 16-bit per channel?
That's 16 bits per color.
Oh, 16 bits of color. Yeah, okay. Well, JPEG is 8 bits per channel. And that generally is considered to be adequate for most purposes now. There are some photo systems that are working on 10-bit per channel. Personally, certainly on screen, it's not going to make any difference at all. If you are printing, going to 10 bits of color per channel will definitely make a difference that could be perceptible if you have good quality printing. I noticed Ed's has, does anyone know where DNG format stands? DNG format is actually kind of interesting because it is just a wrapper around a lossless JPEG format. So a DNG is often considered to be a raw format file, but it really is a JPEG format file, but it is done with lossless compression. It's going to be around for a long time, I think. It was really designed by Adobe. And Yeah, it's a format that they thought would be more transferable between different computer systems, different editing systems, and things like that, and not have to rely on editors that can understand the raw format that every camera manufacturer comes out with. I think DNG will be around for a long time, but whether it's really required is another question, I guess.
You can also reduce the size of JPEGs with the Riot Optimizer, which this is a...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, any JPEG editor, any editor that can handle JPEG will allow you to play around with color depths as well as resolutions and things like that. So, yeah, you can convert JPEGs from one level of compression or lossiness with another.
Well, no, Riot does it more intelligently. It actually kind of slowly reduces the, I guess, the number of colors and other stuff on the basis of how it would look to a human as opposed to JPEG compression. Also, it will reduce it to a certain size. So, for example, if you wanted to fit it in exactly 4 megabytes, you can. And that's useful. For example, I use it when I store an audio book. It usually comes with a picture of the cover, and the picture of the cover is usually like 90 kilobytes. And I reduce it with Riot in OrphanView to 32 kilobytes. And, well, I can't detect the difference, but it does it intelligently as opposed to kind of what the JPEG value compression does.
Yeah, Bill notes that JPEG is standard in all cameras. Any other formats and new ones yet? I mean, DNG is supported natively on some cameras. TIFF is certainly supported on some RAW format, which is usually, well, I think always, dependent on the particular manufacturer. Every manufacturer of camera comes out with their own RAW format that the photo editors have to scramble and interpret correctly when they come up with a new camera. There are a couple of others out there now, and to say some mind, I think they're one of the four that I mentioned is natively supported on a few high-end cameras, but it seems to be a bit of a mishmash. And the Petapixel podcast that I we put the URL into the chat on it is, or actually, I don't think, Alan, you didn't pick up that one. There is the Petapixel podcast. They talked a lot about that, and the hope is that they will come out with one standard, and they were talking about JPEG-XL in particular in that podcast, and the hope is that it will become a standard. It will be natively supported eventually on all cameras, and I think that would be a really good thing, is to have one very good, high-quality standard that all of the cameras would support, all of the photo editors would support, all of the web browsers will support, everything across the board, because it'll be good enough for every need, and we would all be well off to have one standard rather than, you know, like, well, as we say, standards are so wonderful, we make another one every week. And so rather than having multiple standards, having one really good standard would be very helpful to everybody in concert. Okay, so I think, Alan, if you're ready to go, we could move on to the trading up to Linux.
Okay, just a note there. The reason I didn't do that URL is because you slipped that slide into the deck.
Oh, sorry.
While I'm talking, maybe you could post it into the chat.
Yeah, I'll have to do it after I stop sharing, so I will post it into there. Sorry.
Well, do you want me to take the share then?
Oh, yeah, if you wanted to take the share, you could go ahead, sure.
I can probably do that if I try hard. Slideshow. No, I don't want to do that. Hmm. Okay, coming to a screen near you soon. I can figure out how to. All right, we're almost there. Just need to find the share control right here. Share that screen. I'm not sure that one, never mind. Got too many. There we are. All right, so now you should see one slide on one screen. Yes?
Yes, we do.
Okay, good. All right, so I wanted to do this today because you'll notice the very first bullet point, the end of life for Windows is basically a year from now. It's actually a week or so early, but next week will be our regular meeting, so we won't have a Q&A to talk about this. And we have talked about it previously, that Windows 10 is going to reach its actual end of life on October the 14th of 2025. And if you're like me, every time you look at Windows Update, you see that box illustrated in red there, which says that your PC doesn't meet the requirements for Windows 11. So some people, like me in particular, have no upgrade path to go to Windows 11. And now we're 1 year away from Windows 10 running out of steam. And what's the problem? We've talked about this before. The problem is essentially the hardware requirements. Microsoft insists that your PC must have an eighth generation Core Intel CPU, or an AMD Ryzen 2000, or something better, i.e. something newer. And the second thing you need in terms of hardware is a trusted platform module, a TPM, installed on your machine. Now, for me, this is a problem. I have three main computers that I use. I have a laptop, I have a desktop, and I have a tablet. And all three of those computers do not meet these hardware requirements. But the computers work just fine. So personally, I have a real problem essentially throwing three computers away and going out to buy new hardware to run Windows 11. Now, what's your situation? I know some people are already upgraded to Windows 11, and you probably know whether your machine will run Windows 11 or not. And if you don't, then you can use the PC Health Check app from Microsoft, which is this link right here. And when you load that link, it will download the software, which you can install and run. And it will tell you whether your machine's capable of running Windows 11 or not. And Chris is convinced, and I must admit, it seems quite likely that Microsoft are going to relax these hardware requirements before October 2025.
Or extend the life of Windows 10, one or the other.
Yeah, something like that. And that seems quite reasonable to me. I mean, when I look at the press, there are hundreds of millions, literally hundreds of millions of computers around the world that are running Windows 10. And they're not all going to be capable of running Windows 11. So are we just going to see a mountain of e-waste just because we need a new operating system? To me, that sounds horrendous, if that's what they do. But it seems as though it's quite likely that they will either change these hardware requirements, because I'm sure Windows 11 is going to run on my machine just fine. Or, as Chris says, maybe they'll just extend the security patches to Windows 10. However, what's the problem? Well, you know, there's no need to panic. As I say, we're raising the issue right now because that gives us a whole year to think about what we need to do. And while we're thinking, everything continues as normal. Windows 10 is going to get its regular patch Tuesday updates every month, and it'll get the interim updates when the out of band ones come on board, and everything will be just fine until at least next October. But then you have to think, well, what are the options? If Microsoft doesn't change its mind, what are the options? Well, one option clearly, what they would like, go buy a brand new computer, which will have Windows 11 installed. And the downside of that is you need to put out some money. And the second thing, as I've just said, is that you're going to be throwing away what I consider to be perfectly good hardware. Now, the second thing you could do is just keep running Windows 10 and don't bother about the fact that you're not getting any security patches anymore. Personally, I think that's a rather unlikely thing to do, or unrecommended, not recommended thing to do anyway. I won't be running Windows 10 on the internet with no security patches. And then the third option is really what I say is trade up to Linux. And trade up to Linux you can do in a couple of ways. You could just blow Windows away and install Linux and only run Linux. But there's a much better way for Windows users. And that's because you can install Linux in dual boot mode. So you can install Linux on a separate partition on your hard drive. So Windows stays where it is, just then ends up on a smaller piece of the hard drive. And the free space that you've created from a bit of Windows 10 that you're not using, that's where you install Linux. And then the Linux installer essentially gives you a boot manager, where when you boot the computer initially, instead of it just going straight into Windows, now it will give you a boot menu. There will be a default. You can decide, yes, I'd like it by default to go to Windows, or by default, I would like it to go to Linux. And you have 10 seconds or so generally to make your mind up which one you want to use. So for me, this gives you kind of the best of both worlds. You can run Linux for all of the things that you normally do that are available to do in Linux. But when you have a specific thing that you need to use Windows for example, you have a particular program that will only run under Windows. There's no way you can make it run under Linux. And I have an example of that. So for that situation, then I'm going to run Linux most of the time. When I want to run this Windows-specific program, I'll just dual boot into Windows, use my program, and then go back to Linux for the rest of the time. So from my perspective, clearly the winner is going to be this dual boot into Linux. So in the following weeks, we're going to kind of follow a plan, and there's a number of phases to this plan, the first two of which are right here. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to create a live USB of a Linux distribution, and then we're going to boot our computer from that USB. And we're going to A, check that our hardware is compatible with Linux, because if it won't run Linux on our machine, then we need to go find a different version of Linux that will. And secondly, we want to look at the applications that come with Linux, which will be kind of replacements, if you like, for the things that we normally do in Windows. And then once we've decided that, yeah, Linux is a good option for us in terms of at least an interim operating system while we're still dealing with Windows 10, then what we'll do is we'll actually install Linux on our computer in this dual boot mode, and then we'll boot into each of them, and we'll see how Linux works in terms of a real-time operation of Linux on a Windows computer, essentially. All right, so that's all we have time for tonight. So next time, we'll talk about this first phase here where we create the bootable USB drive. So Chris, if we can move to, I think it's slide 53 now, you can carry on.
Okay. Let me just get to there.
Oh, you can't do that because I'm driving the machine now.
No, you can keep sharing if you want.
I can go to 53 though too, I think. Like that. There we go. Okay, so this is just a reminder that following tonight's Q&A session, which is about now, Bob Harris is going to be running his special presentation for Ideogram. So stay tuned for that when we've finished. We don't have time for other questions, but we'll have questions in 2 weeks, so think about that. Next week is our regular club meeting, the October meeting, and our member Carol Pearson is going to be talking about the Ottawa Public Library services and everything you didn't know, but things that you do want to know. And it's pretty extensive and very interesting. So I think you'll find Carol's presentation next week will be really useful and informative. And because we have a regular meeting next week, there will be no Q&A. So our next Q&A will be on the 16th. So if you have questions or suggestions from things that have been raised tonight, or topics that you'd like to share, like your trip to Norway or something like that, and send us some details to the suggestion box, and we'll be happy to add you to the agenda. And with that, I'll turn it back to Chris.
Okay, thanks a lot, Alan. That was an interesting presentation on Linux. We did have one question on it. It was about whether you could run Microsoft Excel under Linux, and yeah, basically you'd have two options. One definitely would work no problem at all is running the web-based versions of the Microsoft Office applications. But the other is that you should be able to run Microsoft Office apps under Wine on Linux. Do you have any comment on that, Alan, as to how viable that is, how good the emulation is, or it's not an emulator, but as its name says,
Wine is not an emulator.
Wine is not an emulator.
But, it emulates it pretty well, actually. I have used it that way, and it works well. I've also tried 365 recently, and that works fine, as you say. The only problem is Microsoft seems to want you to store all your files in OneDrive, and it's a bit tricky to upload them to the web to get them into the browser to edit them, and then where to save them once you have edited them. It doesn't want you to save them locally.
Yeah.
So I ended up, I think, having to rename my file on my local hard drive rather than just do a save. I had to do a save as something else, which is crazy.
Yeah, they do make it difficult. They really want you to use OneDrive. Which I can see some of the logic about it, but they shouldn't make it so difficult to use local files. Tom had a comment about the need of firmware TPM in Windows 11, and he has a link on where you can buy a TPM chip. And Tom had, to keep Windows 10 safer, use Opatch. I'm a little bit leery about using Opatch. It only, for one thing, it only patches things that are run in user mode, not kernel mode. But I'm also a little bit leery about anybody writing a patch for Microsoft's code. It's there and a lot of people do use it apparently. So, Tristan says another option is installing Linux, and then, install Windows into a virtual machine on it and allows you to access both operating systems at the same time. Bill says, is TPM module a proper fix or just a way to fool the system? No, a TPM module will give you that. You still need the processor level is another requirement that you actually have, but this would give you a true TPM module. So if you meet all the other requirements, just don't have TPM, that will get you around that problem. Jocelyn suggests using LibreOffice rather than Excel. And some comments about Y2K and similarities here. And I think that's it.
Just a note on LibreOffice Calc. And for most spreadsheet applications, it's fine. But it's not, the LibreOffice suite is not 100% compatible with Microsoft Office. And that's especially true with PowerPoint.
Okay. And Tom says the TPM seems to be motherboard specific, and what we really need is a USB TPM. And I would hate to have a dongle hanging off of a computer just to provide TPM, but I guess it could be a workaround if somebody would develop that. And I think that's all of the questions. So I think now if you are not interested in Bob Hare's going into more detail on AI imaging, And now would be the time to disappear. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Bob Harris to take us through the supplementary presentation for tonight. And I'm definitely going to be around.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Good evening, folks. So if anybody wants to know more about ID guns a little more in depth, I'm not an expert. And are we on the screen now, Chris, or what? Try share.
You're not sharing yet.
Oh, I could share? Okay. Okay. And
I could share it if you want, but if you've got
I can share it. I'll give it a shot. Okay. If I get a problem, I'll let you know. How's that?
Yep. Okay.
And
but I've got your file, so.
Let's see. I would have planned this ahead a little more thoroughly, but I should be able to do that. I don't know why you're worried.
No, I'm not worried.
So sharing not turned on.
Oh,
maybe a co-host, please.
Okay.
I'm not
or
a co-host.
Or do you want me to share it? Because I've got it loaded in PowerPoint.
You can go ahead. We can do it. I can. I'll go for it.
Okay. Just a second, then. Let me.
Sorry, but this.
No, that's fine. Make co-host Bob Harris. Yes. Okay, you should be able to share now.
Okay. And share. And I'm going to share screen 4 and put share. And
there we go.
You should see that, right?
Yep.
Fantastic. That's my ghost monitor. Thank you, Tom. So you see this slide here. And good stuff. So this is Ideogram 2.0. It's been around since 21st of August. I'm not an expert, but I've made a lot of mistakes. I wish I would have known and some of these things when I started off, but it's only been going for a while. So I'll show you some of the things. I'm not advancing here. There we go.
Yep.
Okay, we're a little slow here. Very good. If all goes well, we'll cover the basics, how to maximize your credits, create effective prompt, some of the features, show you those, and how to get the inspiration you need to get the results you really want. It truly is powerful. It's one of the best ones I've ever seen, and I've tried a number of these, and it's when it continues to impress. Out of the gate here, it's cross-platform. You can put this on your browser, your Android devices, iOS, and tablets. All of these will sync to your same account. I was chatting with Chris today while I was doing some other errands in Ottawa, doing it on my cell phone. I can see them from home with the ones I generated. You're going to get 10 free credits per day. They refresh it exactly. You can set your watch by this, like the CBC 1 o'clock thing. At 8 o'clock Eastern time, you get 10 up to 10 credits. You can never have more than 10 credits. When you sign up, you don't use a sign-in with your email and password. You can only sign in with Google or with Apple. You probably already know this if you've already tried this before. Now, moving on to a different topic, I've heard a rumor that some people have more than one Google account. But anyway, so we'll keep on going here. So you've probably all seen the landing screen here by now, or some of you have. This is pretty basic here still. We put the prompt area on the left. You can see the mouse is where we put our – is the mouse visible out here, folks?
Nope.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter. It's in the other monitor. That's right, too. Okay, so the top left where you put your prompt in there, there's a little eraser. It's circled in red. It's not always obvious. When you want to erase your prompt, start over. The magic prompt, automatic on or off, your aspect ratio. The model, you can still use the old models, the 1.0 and 0.2. They're a little cheaper per generation. They only cost you one credit. They're not quite as good. But most times you'll be, not all the time though, I'll show you that later, you'll use the 2.0 for the cost you two credits. We'll get a little bit more in the color palette later. To the bottom left, we have the style tags. And these will change slightly when you change the model. You go back to 1.0, some of these style tags will change a little bit. We'll keep on going here. So in getting the perfect prompt, you always provide lots of context and detail. Be specific and descriptive. Try to include the mood you want and the style. The technical details, whatever you put in, throw in a lot of detail. Avoid typos. I type terribly. That costs you credits because you won't get what you want. Consider using ChatGPT or Perplexity AI. If you have those things bookmarked, you'll use them a lot. So the magic prompt. This is best If you have an automatic, on or off. Sometimes you want to have automatic. Let it decide. Or you can force it. This is better for you want something quick and simple. If you don't want to put a lot of time into it, you have a few words, then you might want to use the magic prompt. If you have a detail prompt, you might not want to use this because it'll change your results maybe the wrong way. So if you already know what you want, and you're pretty firm on this, you probably don't want to use the magic prompt. Now, when you do use the magic prompt, you can expect four different images. If you research this, you'll see that each of these images, when you generate an image, you'll see behind each image, plus for the images you create and the ones you view that others have created, you can view the original prompt. Well, the original prompt for this image will be the same for each image, but the magic prompt will be slightly different, hence the different variations in the picture. So you won't get four all the same. Let's try a little one here. So we want to, before you put your prompt in, consider asking Perplexity or ChatGPT for free advice. Here's what I'm going to say. Please help me rewrite this prompt for ideogram. That's what I say in little colon. And I've got so far I have create a colorful and realistic photograph, a period in there for a typo. I shouldn't be in there. Create a colorful and realistic photograph of two young foxes playing with a baby raccoon in a field of flowers. They all look very happy. Well, that's good context. That was specific. You can't make that much better. But I'm going to throw that into Perplexity or ChatGPT. And sure enough, I threw it into, I think it was Perplexity here. It says, sure, here's a rewritten prompt for ideogram. And it takes what mine was pretty darn good, I thought. Create a vibrant, lifelike photograph depicting two playful young foxes frolicking with a baby raccoon in a blooming field of flowers to capture their joyful expressions and colorful surroundings to convey a sense of happiness and playfulness. Now, the magic prompt will do that for you, but we haven't spent the 2 credits yet, and I really only spent literally 10 seconds to do this. I can copy and paste, like, I can't type, but I can copy and paste. So we can see where we're going with this, and we don't have to roll the dice. We know where it's going. If we see something in here that we say, well, we don't want to see a boat in the background, we can take the boat out right now and then throw it in, and then we stop this into our prompt, pop this in. In this case, we're not going to use the magic prompt. We know what we want. I copied Perplexity text in here, and I want a realistic photograph here. We'll go ahead and spend 2 credits for the 2.0. Want a landscape photograph, 16 by 9. Now, public means visibility is public to the other ideogram users in the forum. We all share together what you have. They can create it, and other folks can see my stuff, and I've known that's already happening. So we click generate, and lo and behold, we get our images are right here. Chris did a great job tonight about saving JPEGs and stuff. So the first, I think most people would right mouse click on an image. The three little dots on the top right one are highlighted a little bigger than usual. And we right mouse click on that. As a free user, I cannot use the PNG. Well, we get JPEG at 70%. And I do not advise using the JPEG to save images. It's too arduous to save them down to your hard drive. And I use GreenShot. It's my favorite program all over. So right mouse with your mouse click, download, you'll get 167 kilobytes. Or if I use GreenShot, I get almost 2,000 kilobytes. And GreenShot is free. It's almost as big using the Windows snippet tool, almost as big, not quite as big in the PNG file, but GreenShot makes the corners absolutely impeccable. You do the corners, your mouse and the arrow keys work together at the same time. When you zoom in on the corner, you know you are right there. I can't do that in the window snippet. And, of course, the format here in PNG is a little better. We aren't talking a super large file here. We don't need to save any data with the compression. Anyway, we get our image here. It looks pretty good. this is the green shot image, and I like that. Now, one of the best things of audiogram or ideogram, it uses text. When you put text in your graphic, your text should be within quotation marks. You can go beyond that. You can describe the color of your text. I want red text, whatever, but the background. Just put this in your own words. Usually it'll just put in, not always though, it's only accuracy, I say 75 to 80% accuracy. If you want to use a misspelled word, sometimes you might precede that with intentionally misspelled word, and that might help you to alleviate some things you don't want. The color palettes are available to us as free users. Automatic is certainly the default one to go with. These color palettes will allow you to pick a theme for your one or more images. You have access as a free user to all these color palettes. They're not over-dominated, but they are dominating, yes. And if you have too much red in there, I did one of the ones before with too much red, you can back it off with one of these things. The custom palette is not available for free users. The next feature is something I do not like. It's a bit of a grump, I guess. If you have images on the forum, you can right mouse click on those images. And of course, you can right mouse click. We have the download option as the second last one in this box. When you press the three little white dots, you can press describe. It looks pretty innocent sitting there. Well, when you view images on the Ideogram public forum, you can always see the prompt in the green box. This is the prompt that the creator, which could be someone else or you, used that prompt to create the image. And you can easily copy that prompt and reuse that prompt as is. So I really don't need to see this description. That's great if you want to put an image that isn't already an ideogram, but it's a complete waste of one credit. The next screen just shows I'm still mad about that credit. That's a bear caught up in a tornado. Poor guy. And once again, describe. I hit it more than once by accident. One more credit gone. So describe costs you a credit. Now, if you do find something that you want to bring into Ideogram, one of the things that the free users group, I'm over here in the far left column here, the $7 a month club is in the middle. We had the Plus guys, they're paying $16 a month. I find everything I want in the free thing is just content with everything. But occasionally, I mentioned before, I've used WebSim, thank you, Tom, for the upload images to Ideogram, to read the image, get the text on how that bear or fish look, and then put that text into there. And that's a feature. WebSim does the job. I've just learned, breaking news since last meeting, Gemini does this with amazing speed, much faster than WebSim. It's simple, it's quick. If you're a Google user, you don't sign in, it just works. Open Gemini, you're already signed in on Google. That's about it. So this is all free. Open another window, and what you're doing then in Ideogram is get another window in your File Explorer, and you drop and drag your thing into the box of the prompt in Gemini. A little icon shows up. You put your thing here. Please describe this image in detail. We got Batman in the sky here for the Q&A. You have to do something when you play around. And then lo and behold, we get all this text. It describes the image in impeccably. You can throw that text into Ideogram, and the original one is on the left, and the one the Ideogram generated from that text, not WebSim this time, looks pretty accurate. The beam of light's going from the wrong direction. You can go back and edit that if you want to. And then things are always moving fast here. Breaking news again. That just happened yesterday. I learned Gemini. I can, rather than saving the file, going back a bit, you got to save this file to your hard drive and all that, then find it in your folder, upload it into, I can use GreenShot to copy the image from anywhere on my monitor, and this can have more than one monitor, and use GreenShot to copy and paste it right into Gemini. This, for me, it was easy before, but this is massive because it saves a one more step. I don't need to name the image, don't need to save it. I don't want to see it in my hard drive for a little bit. I want to get to the results. And I talked to Chris today a little bit. I actually tried copying and pasting three copies of images into Gemini on my, that was like on the computer. And I said, take the things out of these three, put them into one. And wow, it did that too. Back to Ideogram. That's why you came here. Ideogram has a forum. You can see public users in there, the general forum in there. There's a lot of power in here, a lot of value for inspiration. You go in there and you see these images. You can sort these images. On the top left is general explore the images. I can see my images, number two over here, my images. I can only ask for realistic images or design images, or more like design image or 3D images there. Then over to the right again, there's a drop-down box. It starts off on rising. These are images being made today. They're coming by all the users. You get the best ones in the top hour. People like the images. You can go the top of the day, top of the week, top of the month. And then they're all in black, by the way. You can view, instead of the ones top of the day or top of the week, you can view the ones you are following. I'm going to bring the water here. So I follow other creators on Ideogram. And I go in now and then and see what they're doing. So I go here and here's Sandy Scholl 73. I don't know if it's a man or a lady. He's a prolific poster. In this case here, he's got a high-definition artistic masterpiece of a grand crystal wine glass filled to the brim with sparkling wine. Now, I can remix this image for only one credit. I can shift how much of that weight I want to put into his image. I could leave the flower in there. I could change that. Or I could simply put Bob on here. Or I could put Tim on that and put something for Tim's birthday. And get your own wine glass. Again, we can see all his four images that he's created. It's a good idea. I follow Sandy and to follow the great creators. It's also good. If you like an image, it's respectful to like the image with a little heart. Click the little heart here, and that promotes his image a little farther. It's respectful. I've had folks, I'm not an expert, but I have people following me now. If I post an image, I see some people have liked it, and they've actually reused my images too. It's a forum to share your images. So we go on there. We can take the word Sandy up this, but you could add more text in the exact same font, and you could have a birthday thing for Linda. Whatever, too. Something very, anyway, on to this. So you use whatever you see, you can copy. This was one on the forum here. You can always reuse the original creator's prompt from any image you see an image. Now, some people make this really easy. Like he's got his, if it isn't easy enough as it is, he writes in this image with the cat, your text goes here. So all you do is open up that prompt and they want to put, I don't know, Captain Bob on top of that hat. You pop your text in there, and before you know it, you've got a Captain Bob. The power is phenomenal. I've used these things. There's an orchard in Elmont now. I took a pumpkin, was carved. I put that on there. if you save this text for Elizabeth, it'd be great for Elizabeth next week maybe. You can use that. You can change the name Elizabeth to Bob in there. You could adjust the crown if you want to, or just simply change the text. On the bottom left, we could change that, the dog if you wanted. We could put the, open the prompt up. You can easily, in just literal seconds, change the dog's name to another dog's name. You could change the dog description to a white poodle with whatever, and that will happen instantly just like that. You can, this little cat here, you could change the cat to a squirrel. You change your text as needed, and that image is yours just the way you want it. I like Q&A and a coffee cup and make a smiling squirrel if you wanted, in all in the same general format. On the top right, something you may or may not recognize. There was some turkey on here a while ago had a kayak coming out of a TV. Well, I did not use the actual prompt, but I used the idea for inspiration. I didn't want a TV. I didn't want a boat. I wanted a kayak out of a TV with a kayaker. And I did mine from scratch, but I used that for an idea there. Now, one of the people I follow created a comic strip, a creator, and I looked at, and wow, it had the artist and the, I looked for the comic strip online, and I couldn't find it. I think it was professionally done. I said, wow. So I said to myself, self, could I make a cartoon? So I actually first tried to use their prompt, and it was so, with the graphics and the text integrated together, it wasn't going to work out. I just couldn't really rework their prompt for my cartoon. So I started from scratch, ChatGPT. Please help me make a prompt for Ideogram. I'd like to try generating a 3-panel comic strip, that word I've raised from my other creator, in a pencil sketch. I've learned even today, Chris uses pencil sketch too, but I didn't know it back then. Make it about someone working in tech support on one end, wearing a headset, holding a coffee mug, first saying, if you try turning it on and off again. And now I prompted ChatGPT for help, like it started this off. And then a little more help on here. And on the other end, the person has something crazy in their monitor. It could be something crazy. And I'm going to join the Ottawa PC users group. That's my cartoon. So I threw that into ChatGPT. And that's my goal here. And it took all my little prompt here. And it says, sure, here's a prompt tailored for generating a 3-panel comic strip in Ideogram. I mean, it's obvious. And there's my Ideogram prompt. Create a funny 3-panel comic strip and a pencil sketch. Tech support worker holding coffee. You've tried turning it on. And then all this, something absurd on the screen. And I'm going to sigh. I'm going to join the Ottawa PC users group. And it says, this should capture the humor and tech support you're aiming for while showcasing the Ottawa PC user group reference at the end. So just great what we want. So we throw this right into our Ideogram prompt right here. We pop this in. Now, the artist that I saw had their name mentioned at the bottom of their prompt. So I thought, well, geez, I'm a professional creator too. I should do that also. So I used, I copied my thing in the same format that she had. And I put the date in that format. And the artist name appears legibly inscribed in the lower left corner of the image. Now, this thing, we did use a magic prompt. I have no idea what the graphic's going to be. Want a landscape format, we'll use 2.0. And the image, I don't know if I want realistic design or what for a cartoon. So I'll pick automatic. And we pick generate. And lo and behold, I created my first 4 cartoons. And they're not too bad for a beginner, but they worked out pretty good. And here we go here, zoom in on the one here. That's the best one. And there's one tiny mistake in here. It doesn't always get it right. This is almost normal. There's an extra third E in the name Harris. But I'm used to saying that. That's pretty common. But I had a screen for this. I can fix that E in GreenShot with perfection to do that anyway. So that's one of my first 4 cartoons. This wraps up the special interest gathering. I don't know if it's any worthwhile to go live with this. We could do that if you want to, but it's up to you. And any comments or advice?
Yeah,
Chris has some options here.
We did have some questions on that. Do you always get the same image from the same prompt?
Not if you use the magic prompt. It can vary a bit. It's magic prompt. I believe it's pretty close if you would just and if that comes into play using the remix. I'm going to say yes. If you don't use a magic prompt, it'll be very consistent.
Okay.
Not exactly, though. Yep.
Okay. And are the 3D images stereo or rotatable?
No, you can't rotate them, no. They're just three-dimensional, I believe. I haven't seen them rotating them at all so far.
Yeah, I haven't played with them at all. But there's one thing that I think that's all the questions over there. There's one thing that I wanted to show you, Bob, that I think maybe you weren't aware of.
Great.
Let me try.
You want to share a screen, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to do a share. If I can.
That'd be awesome.
Share.
And you'll have 10 credits by now in your bank.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. And share my Chrome.
Should I stop sharing? I should stop sharing, right?
No, that's fine. I killed it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so here is you're seeing my Chrome window, right? And so I clicked on my images, and here's the images that I get here. Now, if I go, these are ones that I was generating today. If I go click on one of them, it'll bring it up into a bigger window. Now, if I right-click and do a save image as, you'll notice that it's a WebP file.
Yep.
And it'll actually generate a 1024 by 1024 image that, and it's 24-bit color depth. So you actually get quite a good quality WebP image
if you
do it as a right-click and save as. So I did that I got better quality images that way rather than doing the save as JPEG at 70% quality.
Yeah.
I found that I got better by doing that. So
yeah, I didn't like the right click. Can you scroll down to the bottom there, please, Chris? Right down the way to the bottom, to the bottom. When you see any image on there, a little higher up, when you see any image in the forum, below that, you'll see the creator's name, which is Chris Day Force, whatever. Then below that, you'll see all their images. When you're on the forum viewing the images, if you find that this creator is someone that you find is innovative, cutting edge, doing things that you would like, you'd be wise to follow that creator, because later you can find him very easily. The searchable stuff on this ideogram is not good for free users, but to alleviate that, follow people. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. The other thing I'd like to point out is, first off, all of these ones that I did, I told it to do three dice, each of which, like one, the left-hand die had the letter Q on all faces. The middle one had ampersand on all faces, and the right one had A on all faces. The right-hand one here did a pretty good job. The left-hand one, that doesn't look like a Q, that doesn't look like a Q, and that certainly doesn't look like an ampersand. And so I find that there are some iffy things that still occur. If you look at this poor fellow who's the hacker, I mean, you know, I basically the prompt was saying that the hacker appears on screen and his hands are coming through the screen and typing on the keyboard. Well, that's kind of bizarre. So you do end up with some strange things like
that.
Could
you flip through all those, Chris?
Sorry?
The same one you're on. Click on the same image again.
Yeah.
You can click on the other four images on the right there, one at a time, too, right?
Yeah. And but I had other ones, too. Like, this is one run of four that I actually did.
Yeah.
But if I go back here and go back here, you'll see some other really bizarre ones, like, you know, three-armed people.
Wow.
And this was, you know, I said it was, you see the hacker on the screen, and they're reaching through the screen, typing on the keyboard, and this is obviously the reverse.
Could we see your prompt there, Chris?
Yeah.
Hit more. Hit more.
Oh, yeah.
Hit more right there. There you go.
Yeah.
That's your original prompt. Yeah. His arms are reaching. Well, you didn't say two arms. I'm teasing.
Yeah, I know. So you do still end up with some bizarre things for sure. But overall, I mean, if you run it through a couple of times, you know, like I burned through, I think, all 10 credits today. But I ended up with three or four images that really sort of captured what it was I was really looking for.
You go through all four images there? Okay, I guess they're on. Right there. No, it doesn't matter. They're all there anyway. Sure. Yeah, that's good.
So this second row, I mean, the first two were not bad.
Yep.
The two right ones had three arms and things like that. This one here, I don't know what he has coming out of his shoulders in the top right. That one's pretty good. It did a good job. It did a good job on that one, too. And that one was not bad. Some of them, like here, it actually chops off the edge of the laptop. Well, for the way that I use my images, I like to have things complete and not, you know, this might be in the middle of the screen. So I don't want that chop off. So I actually changed my prompt to say in this top row where I actually said I want the entire laptop to be displayed.
Yep.
Well, actually, let me just look at the prompt on this one here. Yeah, no part of the laptop should be cut off by the edge of the frame.
Yeah.
And this image obviously does cut it off, but the other ones did a better job. So
did,
this
did
one
you
here
ask for
was
landscape?
Really quite good.
Maybe ask for landscape.
Yeah, that might have helped. Yeah. So it is a lot of playing around with, but, you know, it is pretty cool what it can actually do. And this one is now my graphic that is on my Protecting Your PC presentation. And
awesome.
What I did was I did a very plain background. So what I do is background removal on it so that I have this seamless image that can go over top of text or whatever, and it can wrap around text and things like that. So I've been having a lot of fun with it, and I think that this is a better image generator than DALL-E. You know, DALL-E I was using a lot before, and it has some good things, but I think this is doing a much, much better job.
Would you want to, you know, I was going to do this myself, but it would cost you credits. Would you be open to trying finding an image on the forum and then reusing that?
It could. How would you go?
Click on the little icon. Explore is fine there.
Yeah.
Or actually, go here. Go on the top right over there. Rising. Pick rising.
Rising, okay.
And let's go. The menu there is drop down. Let's go for top of. I go for top of all time. We get right to it. How's that?
All time, okay.
These are all really good images right here. And these they're pretty darn good. And there's a cat running away with some stuff. Roll down to something we might be able to reuse in here. And if someone sees something, something we want to change the text on into something that you like for you.
Yeah, so maybe there's one that would be a text oriented one. We
want to try a real nice, intense graphic with like a good background and all that.
With words or?
Sure, with words, yeah, with words.
Okay. Let's see if we can find something. Like, you know, maybe this with the bear and words.
Sure, whatever. Yeah, you'll.
Okay, let's look at that.
Well, that might be a little tough. That might be with that those aren't. I'm thinking of a real picture, a photographic, realistic picture with text in it.
Okay, with text. Okay. Well, that's a cool one there with the eye.
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting images, eh?
Oh yeah, these and when you find people you like, you should tag them and follow them, and you'll be easy to find them later. There's a whole wide range of stuff in here that you there's a
the Mona Lisa done up as a minion.
Yes. Here, how about the horse? Whatever. Try to find that there. There. So we have a horse. Open the prompt up right here.
Yeah.
Now. Well, I follow that guy. That's Successful Fuel Media. I follow him.
Okay.
And if you wanted to follow him, click on top. So now we have the horse on here.
Okay.
And he's a pretty cool guy. If you wanted to use the image, no, don't bother. Don't do that.
Okay.
Just click use the image on top right. The word use on the top there. Right?
There,
left. Use. We'll use the image.
Oh, okay.
We're going to use that image. There's your text. You can go in there now. And change the text in there. Where's his text?
There's
like
the text.
Short. See, what you put your own text in there. Grin and
Barrett.
Good. Now make sure we're in quotation marks, and you have that done.
Yeah, it is.
Tranquility spelled wrong.
Oh, yeah, okay. Let's correct
that. Just did the typo. There now.
Whimsical. That's fine.
That's good. And now your choice now is, what did he have? He had Magic Prompt on his, and he had a tall, skinny one, right? Like a long, skinny one for the horse.
Well, he has 1-to-1 aspect ratio.
Okay, 1-to-1, good, good.
Okay.
And your call on the automatic on or whatever for the magic stuff.
Okay. Well, let's turn it off and just go with the exact prompt we've got.
So it's off.
Okay.
Okay.
So generate?
He had magic. He had magic at the bottom.
Yeah,
he had magic prompt on his.
Okay, let's leave it at auto. Or
good.
Do you want it on? I think he had it.
Try
on.
Automatic. Automatic here.
Okay.
And then should be good. It's going to cost 2 credits for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, let's do it.
Now, this is real time. It'd be less than a minute. It says 2% here, 15%, 28%.
Today I was getting about a 30-second wait before it even started.
Yes.
I guess they were particularly busy, but we're almost done here.
Yeah. It's and usually less than forecast, but it longer. And here we go. We have the horses coming up here. It's a horse race.
Okay.
And now we have the images. Grin and bear it. And there you go. Or horse it. Anyway, you can make that text your own. And if you want to have that as your the cover photo, the one you like will have the cover on it. That one now is the cover right there. If you change the heart to another one, it'll be the cover. Pick the one you want for the cover. So that will lock in your cover photo that'll be on the forum.
Oh, okay. By doing the like or?
Oh, what? Yeah. By doing the like. Yeah, hit that one there. Now, okay. And go, scroll way down to the bottom. Scroll way, way down. Oh, no, a little higher up. In that same image. Well, it doesn't show in there. Sometimes it'll show the parent image, okay? That you took some successful media. But anyway, it's simple to make your own custom graphics for a birthday, anything you want. You can add your text. That image could be the wine glass with the sandy on it. It'll be equally as impeccable. And
very cool. Yeah, I'm going to play around with it some more for sure. It's the best image generator I've found. And in terms of text, that's one of the failings of a lot of the things like DALL-E is that they very rarely will give you the exact text. You can say, a sign that says the following, and it'll end up being misspelled or gibberish or things like that. And this is the closest I've seen where they will actually generate the text that you actually want. And I don't know why the other ones, generate gibberish or misspellings or things like that.
It's very hard, but just think about it this way, that just don't look at the ones that were bad. Just look for the one good image, and that's the one you wanted.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Of the four.
And you always get the four.
Yes.
So for your two credits, you always get four images. And, I burned through, I guess I did it five times today because I think I burned through all my credits. But, for that, I ended up getting 20 images. And so you can do 20 images a day.
We could have used, I didn't want to risk it for the public one here. We had an option to use the remix. That only costs one credit.
Okay.
And when you use the remix, it gives you a little sliding scale, and you slide how much weight you want to give to the image, or if you want to change the text on that. I wouldn't remix the same one again. It'd be a waste of credit, but you slide or no.
Oh, it doesn't.
See, underneath on that image there, underneath the X on the remix, don't click that under the X in the remix. Just go to show it there, Chris.
Yeah, that one there.
Hit that one.
Yeah.
And then stop right there. Do not click under the X next to the horse. Do not touch that. That is describe. It'll waste one credit, the one below it.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Yeah, do not hit that one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But you get the slider on there. If you want to remix the image, how much weight do you want to have? If you want to use the magic prompt, you give it more freedom by putting it down a little bit so it can move around a little bit and then change your... Because you want a horse with a green background, whatever, or something.
Okay,
eh?
Well, let's try with a 10.
I wouldn't do it on yours, though, but anyway.
Well,
I guess remix is only one credit here now.
Yeah. I don't care. If I need to do anything, I wait till tomorrow to get my credits redone anyway.
Now, we put the same text in there, too. It won't do too much different here either, will it?
Well, I did 10% on the remix. There's a fair amount of difference.
Yeah. But that only costs you one credit. It's not much different, is it?
Yeah. But if you had just small objectionable things, this might, give you something that's, different enough that it would make the difference for you.
So if you go up in the top right in the three little hamburger, you can see your credits have seven left now. Oh, no, to the right up there and top right there. And then you have, six of 10.
Six.
We must have gone through more than that for you.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And cool.
Anyhow, we've spent 45 minutes after Q&A, so I think that's a lot of good information, Bob. So anybody who is interested in trying this out, you get a lot of clues on things that can speed along the process and get more predictable results for everybody. So thanks very much for your time, Bob.
No, thank you, Chris.
On that. And
very good.
I think we will call it an evening. So thanks very much, folks, for sticking around.
Good night.
All four of you outside of Bob and myself. So we'll see you next week at the regular monthly meeting.
Okay. I'll see you on the forum, Chris.
Okay, yes.
ID Graham.
Okay.
Everybody else there. Very good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Oh, we got more people sticking around than that. It was just that there were fewer people showing up in the list before, but we had quite a few show stick around. So thanks very much, folks, for sticking around. And thanks again to Bob. And so we will see you all at the regular meeting next month or next week. And I encourage everybody to show up. I saw the deck that is going to be presented, and there's a lot of fantastic services that are available from the Ottawa Public Library, and I bet there's some that everybody on the call tonight has never known was in existence at the OPL. So we'll see you next week.